Think about your high school self. I'll bet you can remember some times when you felt really vulnerable. If you're the parent of an adolescent or teen, your child probably feels that way too. Today, we're going to be talking about social anxiety in adolescents and teens, understanding it, and some practical tips for parents. This is LD Expert Live. The other day, I watched a special on David Foster, one of the greatest music producers of all time. He told a story about a time when Celine Dion and Andrea Bocelli were going to sing together at the Grammys. Andrea Bocelli's plane was late and he wasn't going to make rehearsal. So David Foster called a music teacher that he knew and he asked if he had any students who sounded like Andrea Bocelli. He got the number of a 17-year-old boy and he called him up and said that he wanted him to come sing in Bocelli's place for the rehearsal. Now, this boy is talking to the biggest name in the music industry for discovering talent and making careers. The boy is thinking, I don't have the range for that song. I'm not going to embarrass myself like that. And he tells David Foster, I can't make it. I have school and homework. Well, luckily, David Foster is a pretty forceful guy. And he said, you get yourself down to the Shrine Auditorium this afternoon. You're singing. The boy who almost gave up the opportunity of a lifetime because he was afraid of being embarrassed was 17-year-old Josh Groban. Insecurity and social anxiety kind of go along with the territory of being a teenager. Welcome to the LD Expert Podcast, your place for answers and solutions for learning differences, dyslexia, and auditory and attention challenges. I'm your host, Jill Stowell, founder of Stowell Learning Centers and author of the new Amazon number one bestseller, Take the Stone Out of the Shoe, a must-have guide to understanding, supporting, and correcting dyslexia, learning, and attention challenges. Our guest today is Dr. Tracy Bayardo. Dr. Bayardo is a licensed psychologist in Pasadena, California, who provides therapy to children, teens, college students, and young adults. She specializes in treating eating disorders, and also treats mood and anxiety disorders, trauma, and grief that often co-occur with eating disorders. Dr. Bayardo is passionate about assisting individuals with building coping skills to increase emotional regulation and decrease symptoms of depression and/or anxiety that might be contributing to academic stress, social anxiety, poor self-esteem, and conflict in relationships. Welcome, Dr. Bayardo.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You know, I am so excited to have Dr. Bayardo with us. She is a lot of fun to talk to and has such relevant information for us. I know when we talked, you said you use play therapy to help young people decrease depression, anxiety, and behavioral issues. I would love for you to share a little bit about what that looks like when we're talking about adolescents and teens.
Most definitely. So if we look at play therapy, it really is designed to help the school-aged child or even younger children. In my experience, I have the most experience working with school-aged children that might look like puppets or paint or anything to really get them involved using play to express themselves emotionally. We view play therapy as basically being the emotion of children. And so translating that to older children, such as teens and adolescents, that looks like using creative art measures such as music or art therapy, in addition to poetry, creative writing to really express themselves so that we're doing more than just talking. In my experience, if you just ask a teen to talk about how they're feeling or talk about school, you're not going to get as far as you do when you're asking them to really express themselves through things that they really enjoy to do, which might be music. We can spend minutes talking about their favorite song or even expressing themselves by creating a story or writing about their feelings.
Well, it is definitely needed. And teens are kind of notorious for, you ask them something and you kind of get a little bit of a grunt. So, coming alongside them, you know, where they really are is fabulous. You know, parents we talk to are, of course, concerned about their child's academic skills, but they are equally concerned about their kids having friends and feeling good about themselves. What I'd like to do today is talk a little bit about the teenage brain and the risk factors for social anxiety, the egocentricity of teens, and then give some practical tips for parents, especially right now during the pandemic when kids don't get to physically be with their friends. So let's start with the teenage brain. What should we be expecting from our teenagers?
Such a great question and such an important piece to open up with this topic. So when we look at the teenage brain, we really are seeing that the brain truly is under construction. So we, in any brain, regardless of the age, we all have what we call a prefrontal cortex, which is the front of the brain, which houses our executive functioning. So some researchers actually nicknamed this the boss of the brain, so to speak. So the prefrontal cortex is there and designed to help us with planning, with decision making, with controlling our impulses, or at least managing our impulses, and most importantly, regulating our emotions. So with this being the last part of the brain to develop, we really do expect teens to struggle with managing their feelings, with figuring out how to plan beginning to end of what their day or what their week might look like, being able to really kind of navigate really big, complex feelings while they're also, you know, pressured to take that math test or score really high on, you know, whatever other extracurricular activity that they're doing. So the prefrontal cortex really helps us master and control all of these things, but it's not fully developed until about age 25 or so. So to expect our teenager to kind of have it all, to manage our emotions, to figure out that, you know, the person across the room isn't necessarily laughing at them, maybe they heard a really good joke, the prefrontal cortex is still trying to really develop and figure that out for them. So clearly I'm really personifying the brain, but what we're seeing in the teenage brain is the prefrontal cortex still needing some time to develop and manage things that the other parts of the brain may be a little bit more equipped or a little bit more sensitive to. So what I mean by that is there's this whole other part of the brain called the limbic system, which is where our emotions are managed, in particular the amygdala. The amygdala is part of the limbic system that helps really regulate kind of that fight or flight response that we can get when we're nervous or we feel scared or we feel attacked. So during adolescence, the limbic system is more or less fully developed, but the boss of the brain, that executive manager, the prefrontal cortex, is not fully developed. So it doesn't have the best skills at managing the limbic system, which is what manages our emotions. And so you put that together and you have that classic prototypical teenager that might feel moody or scared or anxious and is really having a hard time regulating those emotions and even, you know, being able to plan and control impulses or figure out, you know, the way of the day and figure out what they're wanting to do. So in other words, the limbic system is kind of taking over while the prefrontal cortex is still under construction, like I said earlier.
Wow, that is really interesting. You know, our teenagers look so grown up, you know, that we expect them to act grown up. And that's really interesting to know that the emotional part of the brain is developed, but the executive function part, the boss, is, you know, has many years to go in development. And so things can get out of balance there.
Most definitely.
And our teenagers, I think one of the things that's really tough for them is they do, at that point in their life, they get this hyper awareness of their own challenges and, you know, compare themselves. And so it
most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one important thing to keep in mind for parents is that, you know, this, right? You know that you don't want your 15-year-old or 16-year-old to maybe jump in a car and get their license right away and just carry on their merry way. And insurance companies know this too. And they use this science. And that's exactly why, you know, insurance rates are so much higher for someone driving under the age of 25. It's expected, unfortunately, that you're going to stumble and bumble, you know, along the road. And sometimes get into car accidents and probably get into more car accidents than an older experienced driver. And that's because the brain not only has more life skills to kind of pull from, but it truly is fully developing. And so I just wanted to kind of really emphasize that for our parents that know this, you know, to some degree, it's common sense. And we now have the science to back that up.
Wow. That's, you know, I always knew that, insurance costs for driving go down after 25. And I knew about executive function too, but I never quite put together that they were actually using science to make that decision.
Right.
So what kinds of things would cause kids to be at higher risk for social anxiety? I mean, I can see that just this whole emotional factor going on at that age, and the expectations that a lot of people have for them because they look so grown up could cause anxiety, period. But,
right.
But what puts kids at higher risk for that?
You know, that's such a great question. And I think there's different kind of perspectives we can take with that. I tend to explain my thoughts about that using what psychologists call the biopsychosocial model. So it's a long, fancy word for discussing basically that there are biological factors at play, which I did introduce with talking about the brain. There are psychological factors, and there are also environmental or social factors playing a role. So since we really just dived into the biological section already, I want to go, you know, now and talk about the psychological factors. So a moment ago, I talked about the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex. And basically, we can picture this, you know, giant caution tape on the brain, you know, that front part of the brain that's really under construction, trying to figure it all out. And then we can kind of look at what's happening psychologically. So from a developmental lens, you know, not only is a teenage brain under construction and really equipped at learning and just being so fluid with picking up new skills. In fact, it's the best time for a teenager, for any of us rather, to learn a second, third language, to figure out algebra, to study geometry, and all of these really abstract, you know, pieces that impact our cognitive functioning. We also know at an emotional level, the teenage brain is still developmentally trying to really navigate this social and emotional world. So cognitively, your teenager might, you know, as Jill mentioned, look and kind of act grown up to some degree. We also see these, you know, experiences that might make them a little bit more or maybe a lot more at risk for social anxiety. So in terms of the psychological factors, we can look at, you know, studies and theories involving developmental psychology. And one, you know, real traditional researcher is Piaget. And Piaget had to say that during teenage years, we see what we call egocentricity. And again, this is a big fancy word. What that means is teenagers really have a hard time taking perspectives of others. And so you may have heard stereotypes, or maybe have even kind of fed into your own stereotype of your teenager really just thinking that the world revolves around them. There is some research that kind of points to that in a way that, you know, is much more teen-centered, with looking at what is it about that development? What is it about this growing brain that actually makes it difficult for them to take perspectives of others? So egocentricity is this this difficulty figuring out what that other person across the room is thinking, managing arguments with you, you know, as mom or dad at home, figuring out why their brother is so upset at them. You know, they have a really hard time figuring out what other people are thinking and feeling as it relates to their own really big emotions, right? Remember, we talked about how the amygdala and the limbic system are kind of in almost full control while the prefrontal cortex is still trying to manage, you know, what's happening in the brain. And so when you think about egocentricity and you think about teens having a difficult time taking the perspectives of others, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have a selfish kiddo or that this kid is just going to grow up and be completely self-centered and not know how to share or not know how to take other people's thoughts and feelings into consideration. In fact, Piaget would say it's developmentally appropriate for your teenager to struggle with figuring out the thoughts and feelings of others. So in other words, taking perspective, right? And so Piaget went on further and he gave some other really, really sophisticated definitions to talk about egocentricity. And from that, we have things like imaginary audience. And so Piaget talked about imaginary audience being when your teen is literally kind of thinking that all eyes are on them, giving them either positive attention or negative attention. So in the event of looking at social anxiety, you know, as you can imagine, that might look like negative attention or perceived judgment, perceived scrutiny, regardless of your teen having that experience or regardless of them truly being judged in that very moment by those people. And so going back to this definition, imaginary audience, you know, really is what it sounds like. So it's that teenager waking up with a giant pimple on the forehead, telling you, you know, I'm not going to school. This is ridiculous. Everyone's going to laugh at me. Now, they may tell you that in a really overt way, or you may, as mom or dad, really be keen and intuitive to thinking, okay, that's probably what's going on today. You know, the last time they wanted to miss school, it was related to some sort of fear of being embarrassed, or maybe they did get embarrassed and this is now resulting in, guess what? I have this pimple. I'm not going to school looking like this. So going back to this idea of egocentricity, how that might play out is your teenager thinking, everyone's going to see this giant pimple and they're going to laugh at me. You know, with helping your teen take perspective and challenge that, that might look like as a parent, you know, maybe using some humor or offering this new thought, this new perspective, in other words, of, well, what happen if everyone else was looking at their own pimples? Chances are they're not staring at you and looking at that specific pimple. May they notice it? Possibly. But are they going to really judge you and scrutinize you? Or are they judging them their own selves, right? If teens are with peers, chances are they all, you know, developmentally are going through egocentricity as well. So across the board, we can see now that teens may have some level of risk that's higher for social anxiety compared to college students, or maybe even compared to younger kiddos that aren't thinking about themselves in this sort of spotlight sort of way. So that's one thing I definitely would want parents to know.
Yeah, it just is a particularly vulnerable age, I think. My husband used to be a band director, and I always noticed that 15-year-old boys, I mean, my heart just, oh my gosh, I could just see how they were trying to be so grown up and how vulnerable they were at that age. So, and I can see that, you know, younger kids might not feel that as much. And certainly then as they, you know, get into their late teens and 20s, they're starting to get more secure and confident. But boy, those main teen years can be tough. Dr. Bayardo is accepting new telehealth clients from anywhere in California. So be sure and grab a screenshot of her contact information when we put it up here. And or you can check it out on our Facebook or Instagram page. So, Dr. Bayardo, thank you so much for helping us understand our teens better and for all the practical suggestions that you slipped in along the way. What last thoughts do you have for parents and teachers?
You know, I just wanted to thank you as well for giving me the opportunity to be on the show today. You know, I think these times are tough for all of us. And I think just as parents and as teachers, just giving your moment, you know, giving yourself a moment rather to have self-care and to even just reflect back on your own teen self, right? Sometimes you're going to butt heads with your teen, and it could be that your inner 16-year-old is having a fight with your 16-year-old who chronologically is 16, right? So I think thinking about these things and going through the show, thinking about yourself and these strategies will be helpful, not only for you to connect to your child, but connecting to self-compassion might help you really parent in ways that might give you a new perspective, right? Today, a big theme has been perspective taking. So that would be one takeaway I'd want parents and teachers to have.